The mental techniques sound simple enough. I've actually come across a few of them before when I was trying to use essence. They shouldn't be too much trouble. He was being modest. Every mental technique he'd ever tried, quite a few in his years at the school, he had perfected. They had just never resulted in him being able to use essence. Malshash smiled. But you understand that the two, essence and Khan, are very different? He watched Davian closely, and Davian's breath shortened a little. He got the distinct feeling he was being tested. Khan is an external force, he said. Whereas essence is usually drawn from within the body, Khan is drawn from a single source, one that seems to have its physical location here, somewhere in Dylanis. Although Khan can be used from anywhere in the world, it is easiest to access and control here in the city. Malshash nodded encouragingly.
That's accurate. What else?
Essence is energy. In the case of the gifted, it's a piece of our own life force, extracted and converted into something that can physically affect things. He bit his lip, straining to explain what he'd understood from the books. Khan is not energy. You couldn't make a fireball with Khan, or lift a feather. You can't heal with it. But it can affect energy. It seems to sit above essence somehow. As we manipulate the world with essence, so we manipulate essence with Khan. Malshash gave him an approving look.
You've been reading Delatrone, I see. Very good.
He smiled.
And what does he have to say about the consequences of this hierarchy?
Davian stared at the ground for a long moment, trying to remember. Two things. Firstly, that Khan allows us to access things that essence alone cannot touch. Things that are not physical. Specifically, he mentions thoughts and time as instances of that. And secondly, Khan allows us to use essence with a level of finesse and efficiency that is not possible otherwise. He gives the example of drinking from a pool. Manipulating essence by itself is like scooping the water with your hands, whereas using Khan to do it is more like using a cup. Malshash smiled.
I always liked that analogy.
He paused.
There's more to it, though. He was only talking about one aspect of their interaction.
Davian nodded, feeling his brow furrow.
Khan can also be used in other states to siphon, absorb, or store essence. I read a little about imbuing, making vessels. The Khan stores essence in the vessel indefinitely, preventing decay, until its function is triggered. In some cases it can draw essence from whomever is using it, too.
He thought of the vessel that had brought he and Weir to Desriel.
It seemed quite advanced.
It is, said Malshash dryly.
He nodded in approval, though.
There's only one other thing you failed to mention, though it's rarely spoken of in texts, so I can hardly blame you for omitting it. Khan, in its natural state, absorbs essence because the two were never designed to coexist. They can be used together, with training, but they are by no means complementary.
They were never meant to coexist? Repeated Davian. Malshash waved away the query.
A story for another time. For now, all you need to know is that when learning to use the two combined, you must understand the quirks of each. Knowledge of one in no way imparts knowledge of the other.
That probably won't be an issue anyway, muttered Davian, meaning the comment to be to himself. Malshash gave him a puzzled look.
What do you mean?
Davian stared at the floor, embarrassed.
I struggle when it comes to using essence. I've never been able to even access my reserve.
Malshash frowned.
Of course you can use essence, he said slowly. I've seen you do it.
Davian frowned back.
When?
After coming through the rift.
Malshash scratched his head.
Your body was nearly wasted away when you appeared on the Javette. You regenerated in seconds, though. You actually glowed. You were using so much essence.
Davian shrugged.
I've been trying for years with no success, he admitted.
Malshash's frown deepened.
Stand still, he instructed.
He came and stood in front of Davian, putting his hand against his forehead.
A wash of energy flooded through Davian's body, startling him. He flinched backwards to see Malshash looking at him in shock.
"What is it?" asked Davian.
Malshash just stared at him through narrowed eyes.
"Of course," he muttered, almost to himself. "It makes sense. I should have seen it earlier."
He laughed.
"I should have felt it earlier. But it's very subtle. Unnoticeable unless you're looking for it."
Davian scowled.
"What are you talking about?"
Malshash thought for a moment. "Do you know why no one else has ever used the rift to pass through time as you did?"
Davian shook his head mutely.
"It is because no living thing can pass through it and survive," said Malshash. "The energies of the other realm are pure Khan. They are drawn to essence, and when they find it, they tear its source apart, obliterate it."
He paused.
"You don't have a reserve, Davian. In itself, not so unusual for an augur. Beyond that, though, your body generates no essence. Not just no excess, none at all."
Davian shook his head.
"That makes no sense. Everything living needs essence."
Malshash gave a delighted laugh.
"That's the trick, Davian. You're using Khan to get it. You draw it in from around you, any source you can find. The body does not need much, truth be told."
He shook his head.
"I thought it was a miracle you'd picked up how to use Khan so quickly, making it through the rift as you did. This is why. You've been using it unconsciously since the day you... well, since you died."
Davian paled.
"I don't understand."
"It's very simple." Malshash sat in a chair, gesturing for Davian to do the same. "At some point in your life, you died. I don't know when. Probably very young, though. Earlier than you'd be able to even remember. So your ability to produce essence failed. But somehow your instincts kicked in, and you began drawing essence from around you using Khan instead."
He shrugged. "You must have been doing it ever since. Stealing a little from here, a little from there. Sometimes from people, sometimes from your environment. If you were raised around the gifted, it would have been too easy."
Davian felt a chill run through him.
"You mean I'm dead?"
"No, no," Malshash gestured impatiently. Then he hesitated.
"Well, yes, in a way. You are just as alive as anyone else. Your heart still beats, your blood pumps, you need food and sleep. But differently, I suppose. I meant that at some point your body expired. Perhaps it was only for a few seconds, perhaps it was minutes. I don't know how long it takes for a source to flicker out completely. But now, for your body to function as it should, you need to draw your essence from external sources."
Davian shook his head, dazed.
"What does that mean?"
He ran his hands through his hair.
"I think I understand what you're saying, but what are the implications?"
Malshash shrugged.
"Nothing to be worried about, I would think. You do it instinctively, like breathing, so you shouldn't be in any danger. And as far as I can tell, you don't draw enough to put anyone around you in harm's way. So long as you don't lose your ability to use Khan, you're no different from anyone else."
Davian was silent. He had died? He thought back to the day he'd been branded with his mark, the day he'd woken up in the school unable to move from his injuries. Had that been when it had happened? Thinking about it, that somehow in the past he had actually died, made him twist inside.
"I can't say I'm entirely comfortable with the concept, nonetheless," he admitted in a shaky voice.
Malshash nodded.
"I understand. But it saved your life. You couldn't have survived the rift otherwise."
He grinned at the irony.
"It was meant to be, Davian. You have this power for a reason. And the good news is, your body is well adapted to Khan. Which means we can take a few, shortcuts. You'll be home in no time."
Davian brightened at the prospect.
"When do we start?"
Malshash clapped him on the back.
"We'll begin this afternoon. For now, though, we should get some food. I haven't eaten today."
Davian nodded, caught between dismay at the news he'd been told and the hope that he would soon be returning to his own time. He followed Malshash silently, lost in thought. Davian cleared his mind, trying to sense Khan. It was only a few moments before he could feel it. It was less something physical and more an absence, like a shadow rather than light.
Good, murmured Malshash.
Davian ignored the comment. This was the easy part. They had been practicing for a couple of hours now. It was a frustrating process, though Malshash appeared unfazed by Davian's lack of progress. If anything, the mysterious man seemed encouraged by how quickly Davian was able to sense Khan, and even to an extent, control it.
Now, said Malshash, I've walled off most of my mind, but left a specific memory open for you to see. My memory will become yours, though you will be able to see it as distinct from your own. All you need to do is use Khan to will yourself inside my mind to connect to me.
Is that all? Said Davian through gritted teeth, a bead of sweat trickling down his forehead. Khan was stubborn and slippery. Using it for even a few seconds was like grasping at shadows. What was worse, the process to enter another's mind was delicate. It required a deft touch and more mental concentration than Davian would have previously believed possible. Malshash said Khan was more difficult to wield than Essence, and Davian believed him. If Essence had been this difficult to control, the number of gifted able to use it effectively would be far smaller. Still, this time he managed to keep it in his mind, keep his focus sharp as he reached out tentatively towards Malshash. He felt himself push through the Khan, using it to make his will a reality. He mentally reached Malshash and felt a barrier, something stopping him. He pushed again. The world blurred for a moment. He lost concentration and everything dropped away, including his sense of Khan. He gasped, holding his head, feeling like a bucket of cold water had been dumped over it. He looked up. Malshash was watching him intently.
Well?
Davian felt a chill run through him.
You were on the road yesterday. You passed a merchant who sold you food.
He snorted.
You ate all the good stuff before you got back here.
Malshash considered him for a few more seconds, then broke into a wide smile.
Exactly right.
Davian smiled back, still examining the memory in his head. It was an odd feeling. He knew the recollection wasn't his, but he could picture the open fields, the fair weather, the greedy smile of the merchant, knowing he could charge double for food so far from a town. It was remarkable.
Can we try again?
He asked, elated. Malshash shrugged.
I'll have to choose a different memory and isolate it, but yes, I think so.
Davian gave an eager nod.
So is that all there is to it?
Malshash laughed.
It's a start. But learning to really understand memories, that's tricky.
He paused.
For example, you just said I ate all the good stuff. Was that your assessment or mine?
Davian opened his mouth and hesitated.
I suppose yours, he conceded eventually, brow furrowed.
I don't really care for figs.
And the weather was
fair?
Davian replied, a little uncertainly.
Malshash grinned.
Was it?
Were there no clouds, or was it just brighter than I'm accustomed to here in the city? Or was I simply in a good mood?
Davian shook his head.
I don't think there were clouds. I can't picture any. But now that you mention it,
I don't know,
he admitted. Malshash clapped him on the shoulder.
And that's the hard part. Even though you relived that memory far more clearly than I ever could have, it's not just a sensory record of what happened. You're experiencing the memory as my mind remembers it. Everything is always seen subjectively, colored by emotion. Memories can even change over time, be affected by new information. Reading a memory one day can be a different experience from reading that same memory the next.
So you can't take what you see for granted?
Exactly. That's not to say it's completely unreliable. It just needs some experience to interpret what you see. And you have to be careful. Once you read someone's memory, it becomes yours, too. If you're not careful, that can change you.
He paused, watching Davian to make sure the seriousness of that statement had sunk in before continuing.
Once you've mastered memories, they're still learning how to read what someone's thinking at that exact moment. That is difficult. Even people who haven't been trained have natural barriers protecting their thoughts. You need to learn to get around those without harming them.
Davian frowned. They could get hurt?
Yes. Malshash's expression was solemn. All these powers are dangerous in some way, Davian. You can't just go forcing your way into someone's mind, not without the mind pushing back. If you do, it can have serious consequences. Their mind could be permanently damaged. In some cases, they may even die from the experience.
Davian paled, thinking back to what Taris had told him about the smuggler Anar.
Why didn't you tell me this before we started training?
Malshash waved away his concern. I have everything else walled off. Don't worry, Davian. You can't hurt me.
Davian nodded in relief.
Good.
Malshash held up a finger in warning, though he had a half-smile on his lips.
By the way, you should know that I always shield my mind from being read. It's natural for me now. I do it without thinking. So don't imagine you can try it sometime when I'm not ready.
Davian grinned. He hadn't really considered the possibility. Then his smile faded.
Have you read me?
Oh, yes. Malshash chuckled as he saw the horrified expression on Davian's face. Only a little, now and then, to get myself acquainted with what kind of man you are.
He waved his hands in a dismissive gesture.
Don't worry, you're a good one, in case you were wondering.
Davian found himself caught between a scowl and a smile. Eventually he gave up and chose the latter.
You'll have to show me how to shield myself then, he said in a begrudging tone.
Malshash nodded.
It's easy enough. Visualize a box in your mind. Anything you want to protect, memories, thoughts, emotions, you lock away inside that box. Anything you don't need to protect, you leave outside.
He shrugged.
It's a mental trick, not anything to do with Khan. The mind has its own natural defenses. As I said, it already goes to some lengths to protect our thoughts. For some reason, though, this tricks it into raising even stronger defenses. Most of the time, that makes it impenetrable.
Davian looked at Malshash warily.
It sounds a little easy. How do I know you're not just telling me this so you can continue to read me whenever you want?
Malshash sighed.
You told me that your one ability up until now has been to see when people are trying to deceive you, he said. Use it on me. I won't take offense.
It doesn't work on anyone who can shield themselves, Davian pointed out.
Of course it does. Shielding can mask it, but when you see that someone is lying, your mind is in some small way connected to the other person's. And believe me, people know when they're lying. It's not something you can fully hide away, no matter how skilled you are. The signs might be different, maybe too subtle for most other augurs to pick up, but someone with your specific talent should still be able to tell.
Davian shook his head.
Not that I've noticed.
Then he paused.
Tell me something false, then true, then false again.
Malshash crossed his arms.
I have never met you before. It is 70 years before you were born. Traversing the time rift back is not a risk.
And again?
Malshash repeated what he had said, and Davian sighed. There it was, a slight pain, a pressure on the temples that he automatically tried to massage away on the first and third sentences. It had been there all along, and he just hadn't known what to look for. He wasn't sure whether to be happy, his confidence in his ability had been badly hurt after Tenvar's betrayal, or furious that he hadn't figured it out sooner. He decided to choose the former.
It works, he said with a tight smile. Then he raised an eyebrow. Though for all I know, you could be messing around in my head about this, too.
Malshash chuckled.
Sorry, Davian, but I'm not that interested in what you're thinking at any given moment.
He grinned to soften any perceived insult. Davian smiled.
Of course. Sorry.
Malshash shrugged.
I can't blame you, I suppose. Once you know what people with these abilities can actually do, it becomes a lot harder to trust them.
He gave a small yawn, glancing around.
That's probably enough for today, anyway. Nightfall is coming.
He began walking back towards their house. Davian squinted at the mists surrounding them, but could detect no change in the light. That was the way it always was in Dylanus, a constant dull gray, enough light to see by, but never bright, never cheerful. Still, Malshash had seemingly been living here long enough to know when day became night.
"So we continue working on reading tomorrow?"
Davian asked, trotting to come up alongside Malshash. This version of the shapeshifter was tall, and his long legs meant his stride was hard to match. Malshash shook his head.
"No. You've grasped the concept quickly enough. We don't have time to waste mastering each ability. Tomorrow we move on."
"So that's it? That's all you're going to teach me on reading?"
"I didn't say that," said Malshash, a little irritably. "If there is a chance, we will revisit it."
Davian frowned.
"You talk as if there might not be time to do that."
"There may not be,"
Malshash admitted after a pause. He glanced down at Davian's right hand, on which he wore the ring.
"I never meant you to be here for more than a few hours, a day at the very most. I used that ring to draw you here, but the natural laws of time will eventually try to reassert themselves. You need to be as rounded as possible when that happens."
Davian shook his head in confusion.
"I don't understand." "That ring is what binds you to this time," explained Malshash. "But it's a tenuous link. Remember what I said about a shadow of a shadow of yourself being left in your own time? Your body has a specific place in the time stream, and every moment you're here, you're fighting against it. Every moment you're here, the time stream works harder to correct what it perceives as a mistake. Eventually, it will find you, try to draw you back."
Davian scratched his head.
"And we don't want that."
Malshash snorted.
"Not if you want to stay alive."
He sighed, softening.
"I know I've said it before, but this journey through the rift will be just as dangerous as your last, Davian. Perhaps more so, because you won't have anyone in your own time lighting a beacon to find your way home, as I did for you here."
He stopped, his expression deadly serious.
"These skills, in and of themselves, will not help. But being able to see Khan, to manipulate it at will, use it competently, that will be invaluable. It's the only thing that can protect you on the trip back."
He gestured at nothing in particular.
"Which is why we train, why I had you read as much theory as you could, and why we are not waiting to master everything. Because any day, at any moment, you could find yourself back in the rift."
Davian paled as Malshash spoke. He was silent for several seconds.
"Why didn't you say something before?" he asked.
Malshash sighed.
"Do you think you would have been able to concentrate on studying those books if you'd known?"
Davian thought about it.
"No," he admitted reluctantly. "I suppose not."
Malshash nodded in a satisfied manner.
"But now we're training, it will make me work harder, push myself further."
Malshash grinned.
"So there is your answer. It was for your own benefit."
"It doesn't mean I have to like it," muttered Davian.
"No, it doesn't," agreed Malshash cheerfully.
They walked the rest of the way in silence. Chapter 33. Caden stood in the courtyard, sweating, nervous. The nine towers of Ilshan Tereth Kal rose high above him, surrounded him on all sides, improbably tall and impossibly beautiful, evoking calmness and strength in their design just as the builders had intended. The crystal walls glimmered and shone in the dawn, streaks of blue energy flowing through them, swirling and dancing, traversing the castle at random. They were the guardians of Tereth Kal, not quite sentient, but not without intelligence. They, too, were beautiful to behold, though he had seen what they were capable of when the Veldoran had attacked. A sight no man before him had seen, a sight no man was meant to witness and live to tell of it. Ordan glided into the courtyard.
He had been around the chalice enough now to recognize their moods, subtle though the signs usually were. Today, Ordan was determined. The chalice mage stopped in front of him, his sinuous red skin glistening in the light. He was at least 9 feet tall at full extension, though out of politeness he tended to contort his body slightly, allowing him to speak to Caden face to face. Despite the red serpentine body and the complete lack of legs, there was a human aspect to Ordan that some of his brethren seemed to lack. But then Ordan was the one who had spoken for him, who had convinced the cluster to let him train here, who had vouched for him despite his many struggles to learn what was needed. He was the most human of his kind.
"Is today the day, Talcamar?" Ordan asked, the hissing lisp of his voice barely noticeable now.
"May Dreth send it be so," replied Caden. The words were formal, but the sentiments were heartfelt.
"Then let us begin," said the chalice.
The energy crackled towards him, abruptly and so fast he barely had time to react. He connected to his reserve and envisaged a shield, a pulsing barrier through which Ordan's bolt could not pass. He threw up his hands to cast it just in time. It appeared, and the bolt dissolved in a sputter of blue electrical fire.
"Good," said Ordan. "But remember, no gestures, no words. These are the signs of a mind poor in discipline, a mind that needs trickery as a crutch to perform its tasks."
Caden grimaced, but bobbed his head in acknowledgement. He'd been here 2 years now, honing his focus, training himself mentally to do things other gifted would consider impossible. And he could do them now, do wondrous feats that would make most men gasp in awe. Not the chalice, though. They still looked at him as a child, or, more accurately, as an animal they were teaching to talk. Ordan struck again, and this time Caden forced his hands to his sides. His barrier still appeared, but it was too weak. A small portion of the bolt sizzled through, striking him on the shoulder. He grunted in pain, gritting his teeth as he glanced down at the seared skin, which was already blistering. He knew the chalice would not heal it for him, nor would they approve if he did it himself. It was only through trials, through pain, that mastery of essence could be achieved. He growled, mainly to himself. He was better than this. He circled Ordan warily, watching for the telltale glow, so small it was almost invisible, that indicated he was about to strike. When Caden saw it, instead of raising a shield, he dove to his left, going on the attack. He imagined Ordan's chest bursting into flame, then let the power flow from his reserve as much as he could without risking Ordan's life. Ordan blocked the attack easily, then sighed.
"You still hold back," he said. To most people, the words would have sounded angry. Most of the chalice speech sounded that way, but Caden understood that this was a gentle reprimand, an almost fond rebuke. "When you fight for your life, will you do so then?"
Caden shook his head. "Of course not, but I have no wish to injure you." Ordan just watched him, the sinuous lines of his body swaying gracefully.
"You know my people will bring me back. You know you can defeat me. You can leave this place today, Talcamar. You could return to Silvithrin and fight the Shadowbreakers. Why do you hesitate?"
Caden paused, searching his heart for the truth.
"I fear that in returning to fight them like this, I may become like them," he said quietly.
It was a hard thing to admit, but the chalice did not believe in subtlety, false modesty, or lies. They were wise. Perhaps with this admission, Ordan could help him. But the serpentine man only sighed.
"We each have our temptations, Talcamar. We each have our own battles that must be fought."
He paused.
"But you must fight them, my friend. You cannot hide from them. Otherwise, you will never be more than you are."
Caden nodded, though he had hoped for more reassurance. Still, what his friend had said made a lot of sense. He couldn't hide from what was coming, just as his people could not.
"Again, then," he said, tone grim, taking the stance. They circled, and this time he felt oddly at peace, no longer nervous.
When Ordan's attack came, he didn't even break stride. The barrier dissolved the bolt long before it reached him. He dug inside himself, then pictured Ordan bursting into flame. Not just his skin, but his insides, his entire body, from head to tail. The Shallus were vulnerable to fire, but he drew more from his reserve, letting the power build up. More. More. He released. Ordan was expecting the blast, but his shield was nothing compared to the power of Caden's blow. The shield shattered, and Ordan screamed in pain as tongues of fire engulfed him. His scaly skin began to shimmer and then melt as the intense heat devoured all. Caden made himself watch, though it tore him up inside to do so. His friend would be reborn, as the Shallus always were. He knew it would be painful for Ordan, hated himself for doing this. Yet it was necessary. Ordan was right. He needed to return home. Another Shallus, Indral, he thought, though they all looked very similar, came and busied himself next to Ordan's smoking body. Gently he picked it up, powerful arms having no trouble lifting the corpse. He turned to Caden.
"He will be proud of you, Talcamar," he said in his unusual high-pitched voice.
The words were blunt, but Caden thought he detected a hint of respect in them. That was something, coming from Indral, who had always been against his being allowed to train here. Caden stared at the corpse sadly.
"Will I be able to speak to him before I leave?"
"No,"
Indral was emphatic.
"You have completed your training, and Ordan will not return for months yet. Rebirth in the Forges is a slow process. You will need to be gone before then."
Indral was not being rude, Caden decided, only practical. The Shallus were like that. Blunt, often difficult to read. He felt a wave of regret as he glanced around. He would never see this place again, of that he was certain.
"Tell him it was an honor," he said to Indral quietly.
"I will, Talcamar. Farewell."
Indral slithered off with Ordan's body. Caden flexed his burnt shoulder, grimacing in pain, then moved off towards his quarters. He needed to pack. He was going home. Caden woke, a light sheen of sweat on his brow. He rolled onto his side, gazing up at the pre-dawn sky. Another dream. As with the others, this one was already fading. Even now, he could only grasp the odd detail here and there. The snake-like creature he'd been friends with, so similar to the Dargaethan. The strange fortress where he'd lived, if only for a time. He hadn't told the others about the dreams. Alaris's warning still echoed in his head, and like tonight, sometimes he saw things. If he told them the truth, they'd think he was crazy, or worse, a threat. Tayrus removing his shackle had meant a lot. Caden didn't want to force him to put it back on. Soon enough, the others were awake, and they were traveling once again. The roads had been heavy with traffic over the past few days, and many of the travelers had borne ominous news. There was trouble in the north, an invasion of some kind. Details were scarce, but Caden could see how Tayrus was beginning to look more worried with each mention of it. He rubbed the tattoo on his arm absently. The fact that this invasion was from the north, where the boundary lay, had not been lost on him. That glowing wolf's head, always in the corner of his vision, was a constant, unsettling reminder that he was likely connected somehow. They proceeded for a while in companionable silence. At about midday, the road forked, and the steady stream of people coming the other way suddenly stopped. For several hours after that, they walked without seeing anyone, and the silence of the group gradually became an anxious one. Late in the afternoon, Tayrus held up his hand, signaling they should halt.
Do you smell that?
He asked. He turned to the others, seeing the answer to his question in their wrinkled noses, and Dizia holding a kerchief to her face. There was a stench on the breeze that had just sprung up, the sickening smell of rotting meat. Not just a whiff, though, as would happen if an animal had died nearby. This was strong and constant.
What is it? Asked Weir, almost gagging.
Tarus shook his head.
I'm not sure, he said in a worried tone, but I think we're going to find out soon enough.
They kept moving along the road, which was still deserted. As Caden crested the rise, he let out an involuntary gasp, freezing in his tracks as he took in the scene before him. Behind him, he could hear equally horrified sounds from his companions as they saw what he was seeing. The bodies were everywhere. They lined the road for hundreds of feet ahead, draped over piles of gray stone rubble. Many of the corpses were sliced open and already rotting under the hot sun. Black carrion birds flocked wherever he looked, pecking at eyes and entrails with ecstatic fervor, barely bothered by the arrival of living humans. To Caden's horror, he realized some of the bodies had been carefully arranged in lewd embraces. In some places, men's heads had been removed and sewn onto the bodies of women. He forced himself to look even closer. Some of the men's heads were on children's bodies, too. He turned and retched, vaguely relieved to hear he was not the only one doing so. His stomach emptied, he forced himself to turn back to the scene. With a chill, Caden realized that the piles of stones he could see were all that remained of a large township.
Gehiel, said Tarus, dismay in his voice. I've been here before. This was a big town. It had its own wall and a garrison to protect it.
The wall was gone now, only a few stones jutting up from the grass a reminder of it. There were no buildings left standing, just a flat expanse that stretched out ahead, broken by the small hills of stone that indicated something had once stood there.
Who could have done this? Whispered Caden.
He felt another wave of nausea.
The Chartess? Asked Aelric.
He was doing better than the others. Still, he looked a little unsteady as he surveyed the carnage. Tarus took a deep breath, trying not to breathe through his nose.
No, he said after a moment. The Chateth would not bother to do this. They haven't changed that much. Whoever or whatever was here reveled in what they were doing.
We should see if there are any survivors, said Weir.
Tarus shook his head.
I'm not sure if that's a good idea. It could still be dangerous.
I'd not feel right if we leave without at least looking, pressed Weir.
Aelric stepped forward, nodding.
I agree. We need to look.
Tarus sighed.
As you wish, he said, though his tone was heavy with reluctance.
They walked forward slowly, checking for any sign of life, each of them now breathing through kerchiefs to lessen the chance of sickness. Some of the corpses were entirely rotten, while others looked almost fresh. The stench of death was overpowering at times, making Caden's eyes water. Ahead of him, Tarus sent out a thin stream of essence, nothing strong enough to be detected by any nearby finders, presumably, but sufficient to clear most of the smell. It wasn't enough to make the air entirely breathable, but it was an improvement. From the line of trees up ahead, there was suddenly movement. Tarus held up a warning hand to the others. Two people hurried towards them. They stopped in the middle of what would have been the town square, clearly unwilling to run the gauntlet of the dead. Tarus urged his companions towards them. Thanks to a stiff breeze, the air was much clearer in the middle of the town, enough so that Caden felt comfortable lowering his kerchief. As he drew closer to the newcomers, a woman and a young boy, perhaps 15, he could see their red eyes, their ragged clothing, and the cuts and bruises on their hands. They had been running then. Possibly for days.
Who are you? Called the boy as they approached. What are you doing here?
Caden and the others stopped just short of the two.
We are travelers, said Tarus, tone gentle, seeing the fear and suspicion on the strangers' faces. On our way to Elin Ilan. What has happened here?
Something seemed to break in the woman, and she rushed forward, embracing Tayrus and beginning to sob. He stood there awkwardly for a few moments, unsure what to do.
"I'm sorry,"
the woman said eventually, stepping back in embarrassment and wiping her eyes with a dirty sleeve.
"We've not seen another living soul for 3 days. Not since it..."
She broke down again, and the young boy hurried forward to comfort her.
"We were attacked," said the boy.
His tone was devoid of hope, and his eyes looked dead to Caden.
"Soldiers in armor black as night, men with no eyes. Our watch tried to fight them, but they were so fast."
He shivered at the memory.
"It wasn't really a battle. None of the invaders died at all."
Caden took a step back, a chill running through his veins. He'd been worried about his potential involvement in whatever was going on, but this was worse than anything he'd feared. Tayrus, too, looked at the boy in dismay.
"This was the invaders' doing?"
The boy nodded, still comforting the weeping woman, whom Caden assumed was probably his mother.
"Word came only a few hours before they got here."
"Who are they?"
Tayrus asked, clearly unsettled.
"Where did they come from?"
"The riders who came to warn us said they were from the north, from beyond the boundary."
The boy rubbed his hands together nervously, glancing around as if he expected the enemy soldiers to reappear at any moment.
"Don't know about that, but they weren't natural, I promise you that. Stronger and faster than normal men, and like I said, their helmets had no holes for them to see out of. There was something twisted, no doubt about that."
He spat to the side.
"The bleeders are rising up again, maybe."
Tayrus winced, and Caden saw Weir scowling from the corner of his eye.
"The gifted are still bound by the tenets, lad," said Tayrus. "But I believe what you say."
He gestured to some of the larger stones left from the destroyed houses.
"Please, sit. Tell me what happened. As much detail as you can."
The boy shook his head.
"I wish I could, but me and my mother ran once we saw what they were doing. Ran into the forest and just kept going for the entire night, until we were too tired to go any further."
He rubbed at the cuts on his arms.
"They weren't like our soldiers would have been. People were screaming for mercy, but they wouldn't listen. They killed the men, and then what they did to the women."
He trailed off. Tayrus patted him on the shoulder.
"It's okay, lad. You've been a great help already."
He guided both the boy and his mother over to a stone on which they could sit.
"What are your names?"
"I'm Jashel. My mother's name is Lys,"
the boy said, still scratching at his arms.
"I'm Tayrus," said the scarred man.
He glanced towards the trees from which the two had emerged.
"How long have you been hiding in the forest, Jashel?"
3 days, said Jashel. "We came back yesterday and the soldiers were still here, camping in the town. They were pulling down the buildings one by one and dragging the corpses out to the road, placing them like they are now."
He bit his lip.
"They left last night. We were still trying to decide what to do when you showed up. We would have gone for Nacer, but my mother has something wrong with her leg. It would be too hard for her to walk all that way."
Tayrus nodded. He reached into his knapsack and drew out a loaf of bread, offering it to Jashel. The boy took it hungrily, breaking it in two, thrusting one half at his mother and then wolfing down the other. Caden watched him eat in silence. What this young boy had been through these past few days was beyond what any person should ever have to endure.
"We need to bury him,"
announced Jashel, his mouth still full of the last chunk of bread. Tayrus blinked, glancing back along the road. Caden followed his gaze. There were hundreds of bodies.
"They'll get a proper burial, Jashel, I promise," Tayrus said as gently as he could. "But there are not enough of us to do it."
Jashel's face started to go red.
"They're my friends," he said angrily. "My father is out there. He fought knowing he was going to die, so we could get away. He deserves a burial."
Tayrus tried to hold Jashel's gaze, but couldn't. He looked away.
"I'm sorry, lad."
"It's not your fault, sir."
It was Lys, talking again for the first time since breaking down in Tayrus's arms. She moved across to give Jashel a fierce hug.
"We can't do it, Jashel,"
she said to her son.
I understand, I want to as well, but there are too many.
She smiled sadly at him.
We are alive. We need to worry about surviving. Your father would have wanted that.
Jashel looked like he was about to argue, then sagged, burying his face in his mother's shoulder. He let out a couple of long, heaving sobs. Caden looked away awkwardly.
Is there any way we can help? Asked Tayris to Liss after a while. We can give you supplies enough to see you to Nacer.
Liss shook her head. She drew up her skirt, revealing a blackened and swollen ankle.
I'm not going anywhere for a while.
Tayris hesitated. Then he stepped forward, kneeling beside Liss and placing his hands around her evidently broken ankle. He closed his eyes. Liss's ankle began to glow as essence flowed through Tayris. By the time he took his hands away, only a few seconds after he had begun, the ankle's swelling and bruising had disappeared.
That should make it easier, he said with a small smile, looking drained.
Liss wiggled her ankle in astonishment.
You're gifted, she said quietly.
The knife was in Tayris's belly before any of them realized what was happening, and everything seemed to move in slow motion after that. Tayris emitted a single, low moan before collapsing, and Caden knew straight away that the blade had gone in deep and long, a killing blow. Mother and son both had daggers in their hands, their dead eyes suddenly registering with Caden. Absently, through the sudden fear, he wondered how he hadn't seen it earlier. They weren't just tired, terrified. It was like there was no life in them at all. And though he couldn't say why, he knew exactly what it meant. Caden dove at Liss, wresting the blade from her hand before she could stab Tayris again, but she kept fighting, clawing at his face, his arms, anything she could touch. She hissed, her eyes wild, feral, and red-rimmed, moving with inhuman speed and strength. To Caden's left, Aelric's sword struck like lightning, spearing young Jashel through the neck just before the boy's blade descended on Ditzia's exposed back. Then there was a blinding blast of essence, and Caden felt the attack stop, the woman in front of him slumping to the ground as if her bones had turned to jelly. He looked over his shoulder to see Weir standing there, panting, his arms outstretched. Caden dropped to his knees beside Tayris as the others crowded around. A ghastly gash ran the length of Tayris's stomach, exposing intestines and other innards. Blood pooled around him on the stone of the road, dark and smooth. The gifted's eyes were still open, but his breaths were shallow and had a horrible bubbling sound. Tayris was dying. Caden turned to Weir.
He needs healing, he said urgently.
Weir ran his hands through his hair.
I don't have enough essence left in my reserve to heal him. Even if it were full, I'm not sure I could repair a wound that bad.
He hesitated.
You need to do it.
Caden looked at Weir, horrified.
I don't know how. You have to try and remember.
Weir grabbed Caden's hand and forced it against Tayris's stomach.
I know you can do this, Caden. Close your eyes. Try and sense your reserve. Then you need to tap into it and infuse the wound with raw essence. If Tayris gets enough, his own body will do the rest.
Caden swallowed, heart pounding.
I'll do my best.
He began to close his eyes.
Wait!
Weir grimaced.
Maybe I spoke too soon. It's not like firing a bolt of energy. It's gentler than that. Trickier. You don't hurl it. You let it flow. Like a stream.
He bit his lip.
That's very important, Caden. If you can't get the difference, the energy will be too forceful. That would kill him.
Caden paled.
Is there some way I can practice?
There's no time.
It was Aelric. He placed a hand on Caden's shoulder.
He's almost gone, Caden.
Caden gave a resolute nod, turning his attention to Tayris. He positioned his hands over the gash in Tayris's stomach, ignoring the blood soaking up between his fingers. Then he took a deep breath and closed his eyes, searching out his reserve, trying desperately to remember how he'd done it in his dream. The warmth of essence was flowing through him, out of him, before he knew what was happening. As quickly as it had come, the feeling faded, and Caden sat back, drained. The wound had closed, only the raw pink of a newly healed scar now visible, but Caden could not see any indication of Tayris's chest rising and falling. Weir dropped to his knees beside the gifted, ear over Tayrus's mouth, listening for any sign of life. There was nothing for several seconds. And then Tayrus gave a violent, hacking cough, his entire body contorting with the effort. He sat up and turned, vomiting the remaining blood from his stomach. When he'd finished, he slowly turned back to Caden and the others, hand on the freshly healed wound.
"Seems taking that shackle off was a good idea," he said weakly.
Caden gave a relieved smile and allowed his tense muscles to relax a little, from the corner of his eye seeing the others doing the same. He helped Tayrus stand. The older man tested out his muscles gingerly for a few seconds. Once satisfied he could move without pain, he wandered over to where his attacker had fallen. Lys's eyes were closed, but her chest rose and fell rhythmically.
"We need to take her with us," said Weir.
Tayrus sighed.
"No, lad. I saw her eyes just before she stabbed me. Her body may still be sound, but her mind is gone. Following orders, but making use of her memories to achieve them."
He rubbed his beard, expression thoughtful.
"I've seen this once before, a long time ago. We called them echoes. These ones were left behind deliberately, a trap for anyone who came after. Especially gifted, apparently."
"I think he's right," added Caden. He flushed a little at everyone's surprised looks.
"I don't know how I know, but I thought the same thing when they attacked."
Dizia stared at the woman in disbelief.
"But she told us her name. They were upset about what had happened."
Tayrus shrugged.
"And that was likely the case before they were changed. But the people that they were no longer exist."
Weir scowled.
"So you're saying we should just kill her?"
"That's exactly what I'm saying," said Tayrus softly. "It gives me no pleasure, but it is what needs to be done. If we leave her, she'll kill others."
"We don't know that,"
protested Dizia. Tayrus gave her a sorrowful look.
"Didn't you notice how the last group of bodies we saw coming into town didn't match the others? They were fresher, and were wearing traveling cloaks, not work clothing. There were children amongst them. I thought it was odd at the time."
Caden's stomach churned as he glanced back down the road. He hadn't spotted that. To his side, Dizia's face twisted as she realized what Tayrus was saying. She looked at Lys in horror.
"We can't kill her,"
she said, though her voice was more uncertain now.
"What would you have us do?" asked Tayrus. "There are three options. One, she comes with us. We don't even have rope to tie her up with, let alone know anything about her capabilities given what's been done to her. Two, we could leave her. She could come after us, or she could lay in wait for more people here. Or three, we can kill her."
He folded his arms.
"She's dead, understand? Something else is using her body and memories to trick people. She's no longer human."
He raised an eyebrow at Weir.
"Unless you think you've somehow found a way around the first tenet."
Caden grimaced and Weir turned away, looking sick. Tayrus was right. Weir had blasted Lys with essence, something he shouldn't have been able to do.
"We should at least wait until she wakes up," Weir said stubbornly. "We need to make sure."
Tayrus groaned. "She will just try to fool you again, but..."
He threw his hands up in the air.
"Very well. You think you can restrain her?"
Weir nodded.
"I should be able to."
He hesitated.
"Do you think it's still wise to be heading for Elin Ilan now? Coming in behind this army?" "Yes. If anything, this means it's more important than ever we reach Tolathian quickly, before they get to the city. Otherwise we may not be able to get inside to restore Caden's memories," said Tayrus. "We'll take the eastern road. Go around them. We should be able to get to Elin Ilan days before they arrive."
Weir shook his head.
"The southern road is the quicker route. I doubt we can beat them there by much."
"Look around you, Weir."
Tayrus gestured at the rubble that surrounded them.
"This army isn't in any hurry.
Regardless of whether what Jashal told us was true, they certainly took the time to take down these buildings brick by brick. There are no signs of them using fire, probably because they didn't want the smoke letting people know they were coming. But they have managed to destroy every structure here nonetheless, and done horrible, unspeakable things to the occupants. It all takes time. Time a normal army wouldn't bother wasting.
Caden stared at the remains of the town.
Why do you think they did it?
Taris scratched his beard.
Could be that they're trying to draw the king's forces out of Ilin Ilan to engage them in the field rather than meet them on the city's walls. These things seem designed to taunt.
Suddenly there was a moan from the prostrate woman on the ground, and all five of them took a wary step back. Lys shook her head groggily, getting slowly to her feet.
"What happened?"
she asked in bemusement. Then her eyes fell on Jashal's corpse, and a scream ripped from her throat, a heart-rending sound full of pain. Heedless of the onlookers, she rushed over to her son, cradling his head in her arms.
"No, no, no,"
she sobbed, repeating the words over and over again as she rocked back and forth, the boy's blood smearing across her already dirty dress.
"No, no, no."
Taris glanced sideways at Weir, seeing the dismay and sorrow on his face. He groaned, grabbing the golden-haired boy by the shoulder.
"You are only making this more difficult for yourself," he warned Weir. "She'll act exactly like Lys until the moment she can strike. The creature inside of her is making use of her memories, just as it was borrowing her body. Trust me on this."
"Listen to him, Weir," said Caden worriedly.
He, too, had no doubt the woman was still dangerous. Weir scowled at both of them.
"You don't know that, either of you,"
he protested. He turned to Taris.
"You say you've only seen this once before, and it was years ago. You don't even know if there might be a way to cure her, to save her. We can't just kill her."
He shook off Taris's grasp, moving over to the woman and kneeling beside her.
"I'm sorry," he said, tone gentle. "What can we do to help?"
Lys just kept on weeping, her body racked with deep sobs. Weir turned to look at the others helplessly. Behind him, Lys moved like a cat. She snatched the dagger from her dead son's hands and spun, blade arcing towards Weir's heart. Before anyone else could react, Ditzia drew her bow and fired. The arrow sped past Weir's ear and took Lys in the eye. The woman gave a single scream and then collapsed, motionless. Everyone else stood there, frozen to the spot. Even Taris looked shocked by the speed at which events had turned. Weir twisted in his crouching position to look at the corpse behind him, then rose.
"Thank you, Ditzia," he said sadly.
Taris grimaced, then stepped forward.
"We need to move. There could be more of them out there for all we know. This area isn't safe."
The others gave him silent acknowledgments, and they moved onwards, away from the horrors of Gahil. Though no one suggested it, they traveled late into the night. None of them wanted to be closer to the desecrated town than they had to be. They walked in heavy, stunned silence, but every time someone glanced in his direction, Caden couldn't help but flinch a little. They didn't show it, but his companions had to be wondering anew about his role in all this, what his connection was to these invaders. They had to be asking themselves just how far he could be trusted. And after what he'd just seen, he couldn't blame them. He gritted his teeth and marched on.
Chapter 34.
Asha stared at the ring in the palm of her hand.
"You seem preoccupied."
She started as Aaron's voice came from just behind her ear. She spun, flushing.
"Sorry,"
she said, shaking her head.
"What were you saying?"
"I was saying that ring goes with the weapons."
Aaron gingerly removed the thin silver circle from her grasp.
"It creates a focused burst of air."
Asha frowned.
"Doesn't sound terribly dangerous."
"It's strong enough to punch through a wall," Aaron assured her.
"How do you know?"
"Best we don't talk about that,"
Aaron placed the ring next to a pair of copper gauntlets on the shelf. But it certainly doesn't need testing, as denoted by the fact it was on the weapons shelf. Asher shook her head again, flushing.
Sorry.
When Alosian had suggested that she help Aaron sift through administration's stockpile of vessels to look for something that could potentially be used against the blind, she had thought it sounded like an interesting diversion. The reality had been that though Aaron needed someone on hand in case he injured himself testing a new device, there wasn't a lot she could do to assist him otherwise. Even watching the process was relatively dull. Aaron was always cautious and only ever fed a trickle of essence into each device, often with no result. With little else to keep her occupied, her thoughts kept drifting. It had been a week since the Shadraheen's grisly gift had been delivered, and as her residual fears after the kidnapping had gradually eased, her focus had more and more turned back to Davian. His appearance in her room seemed an age ago now, and sometimes she doubted her memory of the event. Even so, when she thought about it, really thought about it, she knew she hadn't been dreaming.
"It's okay."
Aaron gave her a quizzical look.
"Is something wrong? You've been awfully quiet this morning." "No, I'm fine." "Well, best you pay attention, if you can. We're not filing books here. Some of these things really could be useful, and I'd hate to miss something." "Sorry," Asher repeated, more contritely this time.
Aaron was right. She needed to concentrate. She wandered over to an unsorted shelf, picking up an abstract symbol carved from some sort of blue-green rock.
"How much chance do you think we have of finding something we can use?"
"Almost none," replied Aaron cheerfully. "I've done this a few times now. The veils are the most useful thing we've found by a long way, and that was more than a year ago now."
He shrugged.
"It's just a slow process. I'm not supposed to put too much essence into any one vessel. Safety reasons, aside from not wanting to get a mark or set off any finders. So most of the time, testing does nothing. As you've no doubt concluded," he added with a wry grin.
Asher gave him an absent nod in response, suddenly noticing a pile of small black disks heaped on another shelf of sorted vessels. She knew what they were, had witnessed enough people being made into shadows, even if she couldn't remember the experience herself. She stared at the pile, her thoughts already beginning to drift again as Aaron turned back to his task. She mentally replayed what Davian had said to her, as she'd often found herself doing over the past few days. Felt herself flush with anger as she considered what it meant if he'd really been there. It would mean that she'd been lied to by Ilseth. It would mean that the story of how she'd become a shadow was just that, a story. This time the frustration and anger settled in her stomach, burned steady rather than faded. It was too much. She was tired of being used, tired of not knowing what to believe. She needed to find out what was real. She took a deep breath.
"If I let you read me, do you think it's possible you could access the memories from when I was made a shadow? The ones from the morning of the attack at Kaladel?"
Aaron stopped what he was doing, gaping at her.
"What?"
Asher turned to face him. The anger was still there, hot and low, nowhere to escape.
"Can you access the memories I've lost?" she said succinctly.
Why would you want to do that?"
Aaron looked flustered.
"Because I think the man who made